First of all, thank you so much for joining us. I know that you've got a very busy schedule between your teaching and your practice, and I know you're writing books all the time and you know, doing great work for homeopathy, so it's really greatly appreciated. Let me just introduce you for those people who are not yet familiar. You mentioned you haven't been over to the States yet. We really definitely need to get you over here. For those of you who haven't yet heard of Liz Lehler, Liz began working as an integrative natural therapist in 1980, and she developed a thriving practice in Melbourne. Her practice right now includes several areas of special focus. One is the idea of delusion rubrics. And basically, Liz has explored delusion rubrics, which basically mirror the crisis that is both the cause and cure of illness. And this has proven to be a very powerful tool in her practice. Liz is skilled in teaching both students and experienced homeopaths how to listen for the delusion in the case. Liz recently published a book called Homeopathic Psychiatry, and this book is now available on the Whole Health Now website. And actually, I believe if you check out there, you'll see that there's actually a discount, a 10% discount on the book. It was published in 2011, and it's a materia medica study of the psychotherapeutic application of the need for the psychological delusions within each of the constitutional remedy profiles. The materia medica greatly expands our understanding of destructive pathology within the similimum, transforming case repertorization. So this is a very interesting book, and it's almost, I think, Liz, almost 900 pages, is that correct?
Oh, it's huge. It's 280,000 words or something.
Yeah.
With an analysis of every single delusion rubric and what it actually means and how you use it in a case.
Fantastic. I mean, it looks just really tremendous. Another area of focus for Liz is remedy types and relationships, and Liz has successfully, through the treatment of her own son's illness, helped to cement her belief in the unique healing abilities of homeopathy, and it was also the inspiration behind her book called A Homeopathic Guide to Partnership and Compatibility, which again is available through the Whole Health Now bookstore. To explore the dynamics that are at work between partners, Liz uses homeopathic relationship analysis. She uses characters from literature and media to illustrate personal needs in a relationship. So, for example, Hamlet as Mercurium Muriaticum Acidum, or Alice in Wonderland as Agaricus Muscarius. And the understanding that awakens from this kind of analysis really contributes to a healthy partnership. Liz has also been involved in a successful fertility program, and she originated this program based on the ideology of Dr. Leon Vanier. And as of March 2011, she's worked with 280 different women and been successful with 246 babies born. Liz currently works to help homeopathy reach the mainstream public. Both her books and her successful work with infertility have attracted people who would otherwise never have tried homeopathy. And it's really a great pleasure to have Liz join us. Just in the little bit of time that I've had the opportunity to collaborate with her, I can see that she's a very incisive, very bright individual who has a capacity for clearly explaining her ideas and a real passion for homeopathy and a desire to grow it around the world. So it's really a great pleasure to have her join us for tonight's session. Now, for tonight, Liz is going to do is she's actually going to go through a case. So for those of you who are on the call, what I would suggest is if you've got your synthesis repertory there in front of you, open it up, and as she's reading through the case, try to identify the important symptoms of the case, and then go ahead and if you can, find the corresponding rubrics. If you've got a homeopathic software program like Radar or one of the other software programs, go ahead and you can use that as well. And then after the call is over, this call will be recorded. We will be posting that case up on our website as a PDF file, and we will also make available for people who do have Radar a little .cas file so they can actually download the actual rubrics from the case. So this should be a very interesting way to explore her ideas through an actual clinical situation, a case from her own practice, and I think we'll all find it quite useful. So Liz, unless there's anything else that you'd like me to say about...
No, thank you very much. That was a very good introduction.
Okay. Liz, are you teaching anywhere that you might want to mention to people in case they're traveling around the world?
So this year I'm teaching in New Zealand in May and then in Germany in September, and then in Belgium for Crystal. And then I'm teaching in London in the end of September, the start of October.
Fantastic.
That's if what
people,
I'm doing this year. And then I'm teaching also in Melbourne, but that's a long way for everybody to go.
Okay.
But that's in August.
Fantastic. Liz, if people want more information about any of those events, where could they find that information?
I'll send you that file.
Okay, we can post that up next to the call as well.
Yes, I'll send you the itinerary.
Fantastic, fantastic. So, Liz, with that, I'll let you take it over.
Okay, great. Now, so what I want everyone to do is I want you to note what I'm saying in the case is extremely unusual to you. I come from a psychotherapy background, so a lot of the cases that I see have got severe psychosis plus physical illness. And this is one of those cases. But this is a case which is a very good case to use to teach people how to think about looking at repertorizing using the five systems that I've developed within the new Radar Opus program that's going to come out. Those five systems are also outlined in great detail in the book. But, so let's start. So what I want you to note is keywords, which I will tell you, but you're going to get all of this information plus the whole case sent to you. So don't worry about writing down any details of the case. What I want you to note is what is unusual and then what remedies you think you would think of. But then at the end, I'd like you to tell me what you came up with and we'll talk about it. So it's not so much, I don't care so much about the remedy, I just want you to start thinking about how to work out what is strange, rare and peculiar in this case. Now, this is a case of a man who came to see me. He is a Christian pastor and he came to see me because he essentially came to see me for his chronic fatigue syndrome and his frequent urination. Now, he starts telling me that there's a lot of conflict inside of him because he's not sure whether it's Jesus or the devil who is influencing him. He's able to hear somebody telling him what he should do, but he's not sure whether that's Jesus or the devil. Now, it's very interesting to listen to this because he's not saying that he is God, nor is he saying that he's the devil. Now, the key words that he keeps repeating are a lot of anxiety, weakness, and fragility. So his presenting issue is he's got a lot of physical weakness and exhaustion, a lot of crippling anxiety, frequent urination, and a lot of food sensitivities. He suffers from clinical depression. He's very afraid of people. So when parishioners come into the church, he will actually go out the back door so that he doesn't run into any of his parishioners. So you can imagine, as a pastor of a church, this is somewhat problematic. He's also very, very scared of any degree of taking on any legal responsibility in the church in case somebody sues. He's very scared of all insurance claims. He has a lot of learning difficulties and struggled a lot to finish his seminary thesis. He suffers from crippling depression and chronic fatigue. And he dropped out of society and moved away to the hills. So it's sort of equivalent to going to live in Arizona, what he did. Now, he is a vegetarian, very committed to being a vegetarian, but he hasn't told his current wife, his second wife, that he is a vegetarian. And his wife insists on cooking him meat, which he doesn't like eating, but he can't reveal to her that he's a vegetarian and he eats the meat. He suffers with terrible anxiety after he eats and has a lot of pain with gastritis. He hides all of his past life from his wife, plus from his parishioners. So he hides, first of all, his psychic abilities from everybody, and he hides his vegetarianism, his yoga and meditation practice that he used to do when he went and became alternative in the 1970s. He believes that he's able to hear God's direction, and it was that direction that told him that he needed to come and join a conventional Christian church and become a parishioner. He feels a lot of guilt about abandoning his first wife and his two young children, and he feels that God has forgiven him for his sins because he now looks after his stepdaughter, and that has actually sorted out and cleaned the slate of his sins. He feels like he's a failure, and he's always depressed and overcome with very strong, crippling panic attacks. He feels too weak to be able to deal with stress and the fear of running the business side of the church. Physically, he has frequent urination. He's not diabetic. He's constantly thirsty. He drank water the whole way through the consultation with me. He gets up to go to the toilet 6 to 8 times at night. He has no prostate problems. He went to the toilet 3 or 4 times in his first consultation with me. Extreme sensitivity to a whole series of different foods, sugar, which causes his gums to bleed, fructose, milk, spices, creamy sauces, cheese, mayonnaise. So he has very typical irritable bowel type of symptoms. So he has a lot of belching and indigestion, bloating, difficulty swallowing. Okay, now, so what we need to find in this case is the PQRS. What happened in that's the peculiar, rare and queer thing that happened in his life that started this degree of depression. Now, he tells me that he has been depressed from the time he was 6 or 7 years of age, and he was exposed to pictures of nuclear bombing on the television. And he became crippled and catatonic with fear of being annihilated. And he's been classified as clinically depressed ever since. Then he suffered with suicidal feelings since his childhood, after he had watched a TV program on the campaign called Feed the Children, which was the campaign in Somalia where the children were all starving, and he'd watched that as a child. So that's what happened, the event that happened in his life that started all this process. Now, to go back a little bit further from that, he was born into a very wealthy, established family in Australia. He went to a boarding school in Australia, which it's quite rare for people in Australia. It's more common in England that wealthy people will send their children to a boarding school, but it's not so common in Australia unless you're extremely wealthy. So he was born into a very wealthy family. He went to school with Prince Charles in Australia when Prince Charles came out here. His father was a barrister and his mother was a very well-known socialite. Preceding his birth, his mother lost twin girls who died after their birth in the hospital. His mother wanted a girl and was grief-stricken that she then gave birth to him and he was a boy. She consequently dressed him in girls' clothes until he was 5 years of age. So, we've got several things here. One, we've got a pre-existing condition of abandonment and rejection from his mother. Then we've got a trauma event that he's actually able to tell me about. He's not able to tell me about what happened to him as a child, but he does remember that he was dressed as a girl until he was 5 years of age. Right. So there's a lot of abandonment, rejection. Then on top of that, he's crippled and very fearful of being annihilated, personally annihilated. Then we go back to what happens to him in his life now. So he's very fearful of the parishioners in his church. He feels too weak to be able to deal with them. He's very frightened of being sued. He hides a lot of things, and he's very fearful and has a lot of panic attacks. So continuing through his life is the same degree of damage from the event when he was 6-7 years of age. Before he saw the photos of the starving children, he described himself as extremely fat. He then gave up drinking milk and eating quite a lot, and then he got very, very thin after that, and he's been very thin ever since. He's still very thin. He has a lot of anxiety about eating, a lot of anxiety about eating meat, and a lot of anxiety about just allowing himself to eat. As a child, he was very disgusted by his mother. He described her as having a dress sense that was similar to Tina Turner style of dressing. And his mother would often walk around the house naked, and she would often go to the toilet in front of him as a child. So he's very repulsed by that. His father was physically violent and emotionally abusive. And when he escaped and went and lived in the hills of outside of Melbourne, he became virtually a hermit and estranged himself from his family and the rest of society. And it was only when he got the message to become a Christian pastor that he then came back into society. But now he's struggling a huge amount to be able to actually practice as a pastor and run the church that he has. So that's the case so far. So first of all, we've got a level of self-destruction and pathology that's got to do with how much he hides about himself. Then we've got a level of over-responsibility about the starving children. He still has a level of over-responsibility to do with potentially being sued by his parishioners in case something happens, like if one of them trips on a step or something like that. He's terrified of that. He's got a lot of fragility around his past guilt, and he relates to that past guilt to do with his two children from his first marriage that he left, and his wife, who was schizophrenic, and he was in a very difficult situation and had to leave, but he abandoned his two young children. So he has a lot of guilt over that and feels like he has fallen from grace. So the never well since symptom is got to do with the Feed the Children campaign, and that's left with him with a lot of guilt. Right? Now, the man has got very severe chronic fatigue syndrome and anxiety, which he has had, and depression and suicidal depression, which he's had since he was 7. Right? So now there are several things that are really important to note. First of all, if someone has got such intense destructive pathology, there has to be an internal conflict going on. And this man is clearly in internal conflict because he can't be honest about a whole lot of very important things to him. He can't tell anybody about a whole lot of different things to do with his practicing meditation, which he still practices. So, first of all, he says that he believes that he's under a powerful influence. He doesn't know whether that is the devil or it's God. So, this is somebody who has, first of all, delusions of grandeur, because he believes that he's able to be influenced by something very powerful. So, in the repertorizing program that I set up for Opus and in my book, the new book, what I've done is taken all of the delusions of grandeur that relate to being very powerful, being influenced by God, believing one is God, and I've allocated them into what are called denial. Denial is about where you can't face reality and you need to believe that you are all powerful to overcome a crisis in your life. So the first lot of rubrics that I looked at with this case was, very simply, the delusion rubric, one is under a powerful influence. Then the next one I looked at is superhuman, is under superhuman control, because he doesn't know. He's not saying he's God, nor is he saying that he's the devil, but he doesn't know which one it is. But he does feel he is under a superhuman control outside of himself. So the way that the Opus program works is, and you will get all of these repertorizing maps, and when Opus comes out, the repertorizing program will be set into 5 different sections. So it's very simple with a case as complex as this to be able to repertorize it, and it's completely foolproof to come up with the right remedy. So what you would do in the Opus program that's going to come out is that you would punch in, first of all, one is under a powerful influence and is under superhuman control, because you would immediately identify that that is a delusion of grandeur. And there's a little button that says, click on the rubrics for denial, and then all the rubrics come up for delusions of grandeur. So it's all the work is done for you. Then this man is telling us in his life that he has been abandoned. He's been an outcast. He has also abandoned himself from society. He was rejected by his parents when he left his first wife and his 2 young children. And they've cut him out of the will, and he's currently been cut out of the will. So he's still feeling those levels of abandonment, and he's currently trying to fight the will to be recognized. In the will, it was actually written that he wasn't a child of this family. So in the next section of Opus, there's a set of rubrics, and Kim will send you the cover things with the little, so you can see what they're going to look like in Opus. The next one, very simply, you don't have to know too much to actually come up with, the delusion rubric is forsaken and she were an outcast, right? And and another rubric that you could use if you wanted to, has lost the affection of a friend. All of those are very simple abandonment rubrics. He believes to this day that if he talks to his parishioners and tells them anything about himself, they're going to reject him. If they find out that he does meditation, they will reject him. If they find out that he does yoga, they will reject him. So this is not just the mind rubric forsaken. This is the delusion rubric forsaken, because it's an extremely exaggerated perception of abandonment that comes originally from his mother abandoning him and rejecting him as a boy, but has continued through his life to now. so that he has, it's, and when he does talk to his parishioners, he's such a warm and sensitive man. They all love him. So they don't actually reject him, but he continues to be crippled with persecution and being fear of being forsaken, fear of being abandoned by his parishioners, and fear of being abandoned by his wife. He can't even tell his wife that he's a vegetarian. So this is how complex this is. Then there's the next section, and what you look for in a case is you want to find out what do you think you've done to arrive at this point in your life. You ask somebody, well, do you think you caused yourself to be sick? Do you think that you've contributed to this? Do you feel... This is a basic question that you want to find out about how someone feels about being this sick. Now, in Opus, the next chapter that you would go to would be the rubrics to do with causation. And what I allocated into that section are all the rubrics to do with what are called delusions of original sin. Now, in the delusion section of that, there are all the rubrics. He is dirty, he is a criminal, one has sinned. They're all in that section. This man feels that he has sinned because of leaving his children. Every time he eats meat, he said to me, he feels dirty. So he thinks he's sinned. So there is just two basic rubrics that you could use here. It's very simple. You don't have to need to know a lot of the delusion rubrics to come up with this. You just listen to what he said, and he says he's dirty. So you look up, there is a delusion rubric, he is dirty. And then there is a delusion rubric, one has sinned. He feels that he sins every time he eats because there are children starving in the world. So then what you do with the Opus program is that you would then put in those two rubrics. Then this is a case of someone who feels like he has failed in his life. So normally what you do when you do a consultation is at some point you need to know what the patient thinks about whether they're going to get better or not. So I often ask a patient, do you think that you're going to get better, or how do you feel about being sick, or do you think that you're actually going to be able to cure yourself, or do you think that I'm going to be able to cure you, or do you think that you can succeed in becoming well? These are very typical sort of questions that I would normally ask. So what I did then was I allocated all of the delusion rubrics to do with depression and put them in the section called depression. Now, they are all the psychological delusions of impending doom. They're all the delusion rubrics of he will never succeed. All of those rubrics are allocated into them, into that section. And there are like a lot of them, because this is an underlying issue that you'll often hit with somebody who's really sick, particularly if they feel like they're failing and they've failed all of their life and they're never going to succeed. So therefore, you need to find out, does he feel like he's going to fail? Does he feel like a failure? So I asked him that question and he said, he feels like he's worthless. Then we go back to remembering he was not wanted as a child. So you can see where the depression was going to come. So very simply, you just then put in the delusion rubric, he is worthless. Then the next layer of rubrics in the Opus and in the book is a section called resignation. Resignation are the psychological delusions of hypochondria. They are the feeling that somebody has about themselves when they are sick. And he says very clearly, I am not strong enough to deal with this world. He says, my body is too weak. And so, allocated into that section are all of those rubrics. Now, what I then punched in into when I was setting up this program, because I set this program up for myself a long time before I actually wrote it, then what I looked at was body is delicate. So what I would like everyone to do now is if you've got a synthesis or you've got radar for you, so what I would like you to do is look up the delusion rubric, body delicate is. Is everybody still there? Have I lost them?
No, I'm here. They can't hear you. They're muted at the moment, but I can unmute them at any time if you'd like.
Okay.
So it's up to you.
This is all making sense to you, Kim?
Oh, yeah, it's great. You're doing a fantastic job. You're really taking apart the case in a beautiful way. So.
Okay, now.
Very useful.
So has anybody looked up the delusion rubric body delicate is?
Well, I'm the only one who can answer that question at the moment.
Ah, Kim. All right, good. I've got you now. All right, I understand
yeah,
what you mean.
I see the one remedy listed in that rubric.
And what is it?
It's Suya.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Suya has another delusion rubric, which is delusion existence. She can no longer exist. Yep. Now, this is a very classic Suya trauma, because this is a man who, from the Netherworld since event of watching the nuclear explosion on TV when he was a young child, was terrified. The words that he used was, I was terrified of being annihilated. Now, one of the beauties of doing the repertorizing program the way that I've worked it out is that the delusion rubrics within synthesis now are like, you know, they're listed in alphabetical order. So what I did was put them into psychological sections and then identified those psychological sections so that there would be an easy, quick access. So that if somebody came in and they kept saying to you, look, I don't think this treatment is going to work, Liz, or I don't think this is going to work, or I've never succeeded in my life, you know that this is the remedy that is going to have a predominance in depression. So you would look up all of the delusion rubrics in depression. So, Suya has another delusion rubric, which is also, once again, the only remedy in the delusion rubric, and it's divided two parts into which part he has possession on waking he could not tell. And Suya is in that delusion rubric. So when this case came to see me, what I did was, because I'd already been studying delusion rubrics and already been noticing that if I could actually listen really carefully to what the person was saying to me and then find the Never Well Since event and find the PQRS, what was really weird and strange, and if I understood the delusion rubrics, I could actually work out the case in 5 minutes, as long as I actually understood what somebody was saying to me. So if somebody comes in and says, I don't know, if I am listening to Jesus or the devil, right? That's not stramonium. It's not Mancinella. He doesn't know which he is. So he's split. He's divided. So I looked up, divided two parts, and there was Suya. And then I went, okay, let me just do the repatriation, the whole lot, and be very sure about this. And so one is under a powerful influence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then I came up with the case. But suya is a remedy that has opposing forces. And you can't have, one of the areas that I specialize in is autoimmune conditions. Chronic fatigue is also, I see a lot of people with chronic fatigue. What I've noticed within chronic fatigue is the same thing that I've noticed within autoimmune conditions. You can't have somebody that's got such extreme pathology and for them not to have deep, deep internal conflict. How do you find the conflicting polarities within inside of somebody if you can't understand what the basic psychological delusional states are that somebody's saying to you? Because Suya also has a lot of rubrics, which everyone will see within the repatriation to do with urinary things, etc. But if I'd started there, I would never have come up with Suya, because Suya has only comes up as a one in all of those, all the rubrics to do with urination, etc. So Suya has, you know, a whole series of rubrics around, you know, that they're too thin. Like Suya has a delusion rubric, diminished, he is too thin. This man has spent his life not eating, and he has terrible anxiety if he eats. He has an invested interest psychologically in remaining really thin because of the guilt that he feels when he eats. So therefore, you have the pre-existing conflict that he's telling me that will contribute to his chronic fatigue syndrome. Right? Now, you know, as Suya has also has the mind rubric, secrecy, right? Which is, right? So if he's, that's very clear. But within that rubric, in that mind rubric secrecy, there's also a lot of other remedies. And if I was to just use all of the mind rubrics, and I've included some of the mind rubrics in the repatriation for everyone to have a look at, but if I was just to include those, I would never have arrived at Suya, because I did all of the repatriations in developing the Opus program. I went about it every single which way to prove that it actually worked to myself before I actually presented it to Greg Cope. And even when I was actually teaching this program and Greg actually did the repertorization for me, and when he came up with Suya, I went, oh, wow, it works. So I've done it every single which way, but I would never have arrived at Suya just in the repertorization. Now, one of the things that I've found, and I have immense respect for the Sankaran method to do with sensations. As you can see, a lot of my work is very similar to finding what is unusual within a case. But I am a complete stickler for knowing what rubrics are and repertorizing, because if you learn how to repertorize properly, you will not be left in the dark as to what's going on. So why I wanted to develop the program for Opus was to develop a program that, as I said before, was completely foolproof. You couldn't fail in coming up with Suya in this repertorization, whereas a lot of other repertorizations, when you use just the mind rubrics and not the delusion rubrics, you can equally come up with a lot of other remedies in the repertorization that it could equally be. And as you know, quite a lot of remedies come up in a hell of a lot of the mind rubrics. And continually when you do a repertorization, you will get all of the main remedies like sulfur, etc., 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 that will all come up in the repertorization, and the remedy won't be those. So you can see, I could then understand why Sankaran came up with the methodology and the systems that he came up with. And I myself worked out my own constitutional remedy using a Sankaran method. So I have incredible respect for it. But for the homeopath, the everyday homeopath, trying to work out a patient's sensation, it's proved to be hours upon hours of work. And I can see when with my students when they're trying to use that methodology, they haven't got anything concrete they can actually sort of stand on that's actually going to hold them solid. But within the, there's this whole section in our repertory that's always been existing there, and they're the delusion rubrics. And they are, by their very essence, delusion, psychological delusion means it is something that is peculiar, not normal, rare, strange. It's weird for someone who is already sick and very fragile to want to stay really thin. So therefore, you look up the delusion rubric, diminished, he is too thin. Right? Thuya has delusion rubrics, body is coming into pieces. Body is in danger of coming into pieces. That's what he was saying about the annihilation to do with the nuclear. He's saying that he's terrified of his parishioners coming anywhere near him, right? Thuya also has, which everybody is commonly knows about Thuya, that they have the delusion rubric. You know, he is touched. They have a lot of, Thuya is a remedy that has a lot of feelings about being dirty, about, which is why it's often the remedy that we often look at for warts and, you know, the feeling of being unclean that we normally associate with Thuya. But the whole idea is to find when someone is really sick. I'm not talking about this type of repertorizing for someone who comes in and they've got a cold. I'm not talking about this type of repertorizing for somebody who comes in and they've just got the gastro that's going around. I'm not talking about this type of repertorizing for somebody who's got a little bit of eczema when they use dishwashing liquid. This is about repertorizing for cases where there's such extreme pathology going on physically and mentally, emotionally, that the person is really crippled. So there are two conflicts going on here in the case. One is that he believes he's all-powerful. He actually believes that he is in contact with a very powerful force. That is a delusion of grandeur. Then the other one is he believes his body is very, very delicate. Thuya is the only remedy that comes up. Body delicate is in that delusion rubric. That is a delusion rubric of delusions of hypochondria. Right? That's what that is about. Thuya has a conflict between delusions of grandeur and delusions of hypochondria. Now, obviously, a lot of homeopaths have not studied psychotherapy. And so therefore, when people have looked at the delusion rubrics, they've often thought that they had to do with exaggerated things when people were just sick or they had a weird fever. No. They are all the delusion rubrics to do with very extreme pathology, whether you're talking about psychosis or whether you're talking about physical pathology. If there's pathology, there's internal conflict. The two inconsistencies within Thuya, which Thuya has all of the mind rubrics, religious, etc. They have a lot of delusions that they believe they're fantastic, and then on the other hand, they're weak and they're going to fall apart. Right? So the key words in the consultation was weak, sensitive, fragile, anxious, suicidal, sad, depressed, fragile health, thin, afraid, fears of abandonment, guilty, fears of violence, fears of hell, fear of the supernatural, guilty of a crime, duty, the right thing, spiritual, religious, morals, God, socially acceptable. They're all the key words that he said. And hence, we end up with the conflict between the two things in Thuya. The delicacy, the thinness, the brittleness. Thuya has the body. Body is brittle. Yeah? Thuya has all the delusion rubrics. Body's lighter than air. Body is immaterial. Body's going to fall apart. The body's ugly. Time has come to die. Diminished. Yeah? Thuya also has another delusion rubric divided two parts into, which was the first delusion rubric that I looked up, and then I looked up divided two parts into which part he was on possession on waking, he could not tell. And then I went back and worked through the whole case. All right, now, Kim, do you want to turn it over to anybody so that they could ask me some questions?
Yeah, sure. I actually had a couple of questions for you first.
Yeah, sure, good.
Well, the first one is, first of all, fantastic case and really incisive analysis, and very clearly it demonstrates how you can arrive at a remedy very quickly through this understanding of the delusions and deeper mental qualities of the patient. My question is, do you find that you can use this approach in basically every case, or are there some cases where you find that you're more focusing on the physical symptomology, or what is your experience with this?
Well, I tend to attract, I don't see a lot of children in my practice. I have a too long a waiting list to get to see me, so hence why I don't really see a lot of children. So I don't really see a lot of very simple cases. I see people who are sick. That's the problem. So I see people who've got a whole series of autoimmune conditions, you know, or they've got cancer, chronic fatigue, extreme food allergies, all of those sort of, you know, conditions. Sometimes I see people, occasionally somebody will come in and it'll be a really simple case. And then I'm basically looking at the mind rubrics. It's nothing really extreme, but they're not usually the type of people that I see in my practice. So I sort of had that area of my work, and then the other area of my work is the fertility work that I do. And then occasionally in that fertility work, occasionally I might see the person, like the mother afterwards, and then it'll be for something really simple, like she might have a bit of mastitis or something like that. Then I'm really doing a very simple repertorization the same way as everybody else would do. Yeah? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, very much. And
yep.
My other question is, it sounds like the approach that you use, which is fascinating, that there must be some interesting case-taking approaches that you've developed. I'm curious, have you written about these?
Yes. So those case-taking techniques, right, so it's what I did with the OPUS program was put those case-taking techniques into a series of five panels with five lists of questions, right? You don't have to use my exact words. I'm not a stickler for that, of course. But basically the principle is to sort of read through those questions and then to put them into your own language. But basically, my basic premise is that every single patient walking in, right, if they're severely sick, will go through a series of psychological stages in the consultation. That is going to happen in the consultation. That's a given. That other people might find hard to accept, but that's my experience. And I'm sure that a lot of listeners would know the work of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. So basically she said, that when somebody was dealing with cancer, they went through a series of stages. And what I did was, first of all, I'd studied her work, but also what I did was then over the years, I started to realize that what my patient was telling me was exactly what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said about what somebody would go through if they had cancer. Now, I don't have a huge amount of cancer patients, but basically somebody comes in and they'll tell me something very simple, like they're dealing with a very simple problem. And they'll first of all go into, well, you know, and this is a sort of a basic defense mechanism that people will go into. Well, you know, I'm not really sure whether I, you know, need you. I think I can actually fix this problem by myself, right? And you sort of sit there and you think, well, why did you bother coming to see me? Is the first response. And then you think, okay, let's just sit with this for a little while. And then I ask the questions along the lines of the panels that I set up for Opus about how you elicit denial within the case. You need to elicit the patient's denial to see their delusions of denial, how they're not facing the reality of how sick they are. It's not easy to face sickness. So everybody will go through that to some degree or other. The intensity of that denial will be based on the remedy, the constitutional remedy, of course. So then people will go through, to a certain extent, you know, this happened to me because somebody else did this to me, somebody else upset me, or I was abandoned by somebody. I'm going through this because this person did this to me. They're all the delusion rubrics to do with abandonment and persecution. Even if somebody comes in for a cold, they can often go back into very deep pathology, the very extreme part of their constitution, and say to you, well, I got this because there's that person I'm sitting next to in the office, and she comes in and she always makes me sick. She's the one who makes me sick. Right? That, right, the assumption that you're always going to get sick from this person is a slight, say, something a bit itchy, scratchy about that. That's called a delusion of persecution. Then people often come in and they actually might start the consultation with, I don't believe I'm ever going to get well. I don't believe this is ever going to succeed. That is a delusion of depression. And so you would look up and think about all the remedies of depression. You don't go to, if somebody comes in and says, I'm fantastic, I know I'm going to be able to cure myself, right? You wouldn't necessarily think about looking at a depression remedy. So what I did was look at all the depression remedies and allocate all the rubrics accordingly. Then sometimes somebody will come in and they'll say in the consultation, you know, if you say, well, why do you think you got sick? And they'll say, it's all my fault. And I did this terrible thing. And it can be the most bizarre thing that somebody did something to one of their friends when they were a little girl and this happened and that happened, or they were cruel to their mother, or they cut their mother out when they were a teenager and they felt really guilty about it ever since. And that's what they really think now. You know, they really think that they're a really terrible person. So therefore, you would have to look at all the delusion rubrics to do with it's my fault. But you don't get that answer if you don't ask the question, so you need to ask the question. So I put in all the questions. Why do you think you got sick? Often, when I'm teaching homeopaths, they ask, you know, does the weather upset you? Does this upset you? Does that upset you? But the basic thing you need to ask them is, why do you think you're sick? What, you know, why do you think you've got this disease? There are a lot of nice ways to put that question, and not quite as harsh as that. But basically, that's what I've put in the little panels for Opus. And then sometimes somebody comes in and they say to you, you know, like, it doesn't matter what I eat, it always makes me sick. You know, I get sick every time I smell perfume. I get sick every time I do this. I get sick every time I do this. You know, you're not going to be looking at a rubric that, like a constitutional remedy that thinks that they're very powerful. You're going to be looking at a remedy that has a lot of delusion rubrics to do with hypochondria, because this person is clearly suffering from some degree of hypochondria. Because even if they've got extreme food sensitivities and extreme chemical sensitivities, they will also tell you something in what they're telling you that will be weird. You know, it will be something like, even if it's just a physical case and you're just taking physical symptoms, they will say something. They have to, because it's not logical that they wouldn't. Because the pathology on the physical has to be consistent with pathology on the mental emotional. It's not possible that it wouldn't be there. You just have to ask the right questions to find it. So they will tell you somewhere along the line that when they're with some cousin that they've got, they always get sick after they've been with that cousin. Or if they go into, someone told me yesterday, she said, you know, every time I go into the city and I'm exposed to lots of people, I get really sick and I'm overcome with their negative energies. Right? Physically, she's got a whole lot of food sensitivities, chemical sensitivities, etc. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, fantastic.
Yep.
Liz, I am going to open up. We don't really have a lot of time, but maybe we can have the audience ask just maybe one question, because I see it really
cool.
On the hour. But let me go ahead and open it up and see if there's any questions. Maybe somebody has one to ask.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
What happened when you gave Thuya?
Oh, God, he's fantastic. In the Word file that Kim's going to send you, there's a transcript of every single thing that he tells you after what happened with Thuya. It's not normal that I will often videotape a patient. Often I will only videotape patients after they've come to me for even maybe a year before I videotape them. But I videotaped this man on the second consultation that he came to see me, and the entire transcript is there. He is doing fantastically well. He's well physically. He's able to share with his parishioners, you know, about yoga and meditation, and he feels strong enough. He felt strong enough to go ahead with the court case, so he ended up suing his brother and sister and getting some money. He's gone off to study more theology. He's really happy. He has a much better arrangement with his wife. You know, he's now not quite so. There's a lot more intricacies in this case, which is all written down. You can read about it. But he's now not so freaked out about, because he used to get very traumatized if his stepdaughter wore a dressing gown and didn't look very nice at breakfast and he would have to leave the house every morning. Now, you know, because it reminded him of his mother and the sort of Tina Turner type dressing and things like that. He doesn't have that degree of disgust about what people look like and what he looks like. He's not so thin anymore. He now eats. He doesn't have the anxiety, and the best thing is he's able to deal with, you know, there's an incident that happened just after he first came to see me where the church was going on a bike ride and one of the parishioners swapped bikes and then fell off the bike. And he went into terrible anxiety over the parishioner was going to sue him, et cetera, and then he was able to deal with it really well. And so all of those circumstances he's now able to deal with very well. And he's very happy as being a, you know, a Christian minister now. And he's still very, very, very clairaudient and clairvoyant. And he talks about that in the follow-up session as well. And in fact, that's actually much clearer. And Suya has a lot of beautiful visual visions, and they're much clearer for him. So he's very happy.
Fantastic. So I do see we're out of time. I think people can recognize right away that Liz is really speaking from her own clinical experience, and that I think is probably the most invaluable thing that somebody can bring to us when we're studying homeopathy. So, again, her books are available on the Bull Health.
Kim, if I can interrupt you, the most important thing to realize is that the OPUS program will teach you psychology in 30 minutes. That's the key plug here.
Okay. Thanks for that plug. We appreciate it. And again, you can find, I mean, I think you can see that she's got this new book out, Homeopathic Psychiatry, and her previous book, Homeopathic Guide to Partnership and Compatibility. These are available on the Whole Health Now website. They are discounted. And we will be posting the case up as well as the .cas file for people who do have Radar Opus. They'll be able to download that into the software so they can actually see the rubrics. And we'll be posting the follow-up and other information as well. Liz, I want to personally thank you. I know you're very busy, and it was just a fantastic presentation. We hope you'll join us again for a future one.
Fantastic, and I'd love to come to the U.S.
Yes, well, I'll see what we can do about that.
Okay, good.
All right.
It was very nice meeting you, Kim.
Nice
thank
you
very
too.
Much for your intro.
You enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you again.
Okay, thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.